Good morning, everybody. My name is Chris Da Vinci, and I am alcoholic. And my date of sobriety is 10/30 of 1989. Wow. And I know it's just, it doesn't, I mean, really, it's, you're looking at a miracle. I'm not going to take credit for God's work, because I assure you, it ain't because of me. It ain't because of me. Me and my best thinking did not get me to Alcoholics Anonymous. Me and my best thinking got me whacked at 3 a.m. broke. Not that most of us have not been at a place where we didn't have any money, yet we were still able to drink. I'm sure you can relate to that. But I also, you know, I drank when I had a lot of money. I feel like the circumstances did not affect how I drank. I've never actually had a legal drink. When I first made it to AA, oops, there we go. When I first made it to AA, I was not even old enough to buy my own cigarettes. Y'all had to buy my cigarettes for me. Oh. I'm not embarrassed to say that, but it does kind of sound unreal. It does sound like, how does that even happen? All I can tell you about how it happened is that God did it. And I know that to be as sure as I know I'm standing here in front of you. And the minor, tiny little bit of willingness on my part to receive his grace is kind of really the only hand that I had in it, really. Because I can assure you I failed at just about every task that was ever assigned to me in AA. I want to thank Billy for asking me to come up here. It's beautiful up here. Man, this is beautiful country up here. It's absolutely gorgeous. Lynn and Billy are like the most gracious host and hostess I've ever experienced at any conference I've been to. I want to thank the committee for asking me to come up. This has been a fabulous experience. I needed to get out of Dodge, and I needed to be around my own kind. And you all are. I mean, I've been to many places where I'll be speaking from the podium, and people will pick exception with things that I say. I mean, I'm just sharing my experience up here, right? That's all I'm doing. Your experience could be totally different. Doesn't invalidate yours or mine. That's a great thing about AA, right? But there are certain things that I get a little tweaky about. And I have come to understand that events like this, where it's small enough that it's not overwhelming, yet the participants are enthusiastically contributing. It makes all the difference, man. It makes all the difference in the world. And I could just eat y'all up, really. I mean, this country down here is so beautiful. I would love to just come back and have somebody else drive so I can look. Because, I mean, the grass is so green. And the hills, oh my gosh. Between yesterday and today, I've gotten used third, fourth, and fifth gear more than I have since I bought my car. Normally, I go 2 to 6. I mean, I don't have like a middle area. I'm a fringe girl. I'm a fringe girl, and I also I'm very encouraged by how many girls are in here today. I mean, I'm kind of used to being the only one. I mean. just about every single week at my home group. I'm the only one. Every now and then we'll get visitors from out of town, and one of them will have their wife with them, or whatever, whatever she is. But not often. And it's kind of been like that since I've been here, And my sponsors warned me about that. They were like, dude, there's a double standard. It is what it is. Deal with it. I don't feel like I feel more privileged to be here, and I'm more encouraged to contribute more when I see more girls in events like this. It's just, it warms me in my heart. Every time my group hits the third tradition, I'm the first girl talking about the Irma Lavoni story. For those of you that don't know who that is, she was a woman out in California. I know probably Teresa knows better. she got a letter from her home group that invited her to not return until she could act right. Yeah. Can you imagine getting kicked out of AA? I mean, look, if anybody was ever going to get kicked out of AA, it absolutely, I'd be one of them. I'd be in that category. I like my AA like I like my liquor. Straight. Not watered down with a bunch of juice and stuff. When I drank out of plastic bottles with screw-on caps. Most of the time, I stole them. Just like my first bed bug. I was talking to a guy last night about it. When I first got here, I didn't have a big book. I know. Isn't that crazy? Back when the first book first came out, they were so expensive. They were lucky to have one book per group, And we just take it for granted nowadays. I mean, I probably have at least four in my car and another dozen at the house. I mean, I don't we do I always have it on my phone? Yeah, but I never know who I'm gonna encounter. And typically when it's ones that I can really help, dude, they're not walking through the doors of my home group. They're out there. I gotta go to them. Most of the women that I get to work with in my, and in fact, most of them aren't even in my area anymore because I kind of have a little reputation down there. Most of the women would pick a different woman to work with them than me. Because I do what my sponsors did with me. That's what I know because I know it worked for me. And not everybody is up for that. They're not willing to do some of the things that I do, that I did. And when I hit one that is, dude, I'll go to the end of the earth for her. Makes no difference to me. I've come to just accept the fact that there are certain women that I'm just not cut out to work with. They want somebody to go to lunch with. They want somebody to go buy soap and candles with. That is not me. I am not the Stepford wife, the Stepford girl. Like, oh my God. When I first came in, they were like, oh, get all these women's phone numbers. Oh, yeah, like that's really going to work. You got to be kidding. Do you think any of them could stop me from? You think the whole pack of them could keep me from drinking? Because when I'm drinking, I'm drinking. Period. The day came and I saw the truth behind that. I called 31 of you women. I was on the edge. I mean, it was either drive my car off the bridge, go get a bottle, or put the pistol in my ear. I mean, it was not cool. And I was long sober. I wasn't like new. And not one of those women even picked up the phone. Not one. One of them called me back 4 days later. 4 days. And she wasn't calling to see how I was. She was calling to tell me about some great job that she got making all this money. And this Mercedes that she was looking at buying. And I thought, I'd be a pile of goo in the backyard by then. You know what I mean? I gotta be tolerant to everybody. But I look at this task like it's a life and death thing. Every opportunity that I get to work with another woman, I look at it like there are two lives on line, hers and mine. Because if I don't help her, I'm good, just as dead as she is. You know? I have to do this so I get to stay. That's how I look at it. And it's not like a drag. It's not like some impossible hill to achieve or whatever. It's a pleasure. I can't tell you how many, just in the last, I don't know, 12 hours, how many people have said to me, thank you for coming, thank you for coming. Dude, I would drive 10 times as far for 10 times as less many people if it was somebody I could help. You know? I look at this like it's my job is to make God look good. My job is to make AA look good. I'm showing off God's best work standing here. You know? And not everybody I've met in our fellowship is, you know, thinks like that. You gotta drive this kind of car and park in this spot and wear this outfit and go to these meetings with those people and go out afterwards to this place. When it comes down to it, God doesn't reveal himself to anybody in circumstances like that. God shows me what's up without even me knowing he's doing it. God uses me without even knowing I don't even know. You know what I mean? Just when I start feeling like God has forgotten about me, which goes way back to when I first came in. See, when I was little, my parents made all kinds of sacrifices for me and my brother to go to parochial school, right? I had a belief in God. I had a strong faith. I took, I'm going to say, great comfort, not a little comfort, great comfort in being at mass, at participating in, you know, going to stations this time of year because we're getting ready for Easter and, you know, like all that. I'm going to call it pomp and reverie and where they put it on. You know what I mean? All those rote kind of actions. I loved all of that stuff. Memorizing prayers and you know, getting to lead when we did the rosary and whatnot. I wanted to be a nun when I was a little girl, you know, growing up. And because it comforted my heart. I just didn't understand that God knew me. And I got to see that here. Watching the light come on behind the eyes of another woman with a dead soul is a miracle. And I get to witness that on a regular basis. My life is not, oh, I'm lucky if I have a miracle a month. In my daily walk, I mean, at least one an hour, maybe one every half an hour, depending on how many people I'm encountering or what's happening at any given time. I mean, I expect to see miracles everywhere I go, wherever I'm at, no matter what I'm engaging in or who I'm engaging with. And if I, if, even though I expect it, I'm still floored by it. I'm comforted in a way that I know that God knows me and God is guiding me in only the way that he can. God, I wish I knew what the words were to spit this out. They're not coming tonight. I look at every person that God sends in my path like he put them there on my path with me on purpose. It's not happenstance. It's not coincidental. A lot of the girls that I get to sponsor, they like to notice the coincidences and then explain them away with God's will, right? Which I can see how when you're, I did that too when I was first, experiencing God. See, there's a big difference between believing in God and experiencing his power. I get speechless. Anybody that knows me will tell you I am never without words. But when it comes to like living spiritual experiences, words would not even do them justice at the time, right? Getting to connect with another sister or brother on that level is that's where I get, but that's where I see heaven on earth. That's how I know God's going to take me home when he's ready for me to be there. Alcoholism is just one of the conditions that I have. I have other health conditions. We got into a little, I call them P&N matches. And for those of you that know how to read in between the lines, you know what that means. For those of you that don't, we're going to call it a debate. Because I'm at the podium, right? And I'm keeping it clean. So we got into this debate about how God shows up, how I'm trying to be cool as I'm sharing this. There was the God could and would if he were sought category people. On one side of the debate. And then on the other side of the debate is the God can and will. And I'm in the can and will category. Because I assure you, there's plenty of times where I am not seeking him. And the understanding of our God that I carry is that he shows up even when I'm not looking. I don't qualify if I'm seeking him, right? He's not gonna kick me off the squad because I'm not, sorting it. Doesn't work like that. Humans do. Plenty of members of my family. Not that I'm not the black sheep. I'm the colorful one that they say. They say, "Oh, Crystal, you're not the black sheep. You're the colorful one." Okay. Look, they can call it whatever they want. They know that I'm different than them. Man, before my little brother came along, my parents knew there was something different about me. They started taking me to therapists and psychiatrists, like before kindergarten. I needed to be there, no question about it. But my dad would say to me, "What is wrong with you?" He will still say that to me to this day. What is wrong with you? I couldn't figure it out. They couldn't figure it out. All those doctors and the priests and the nun, like none of them could figure it out. My dad was a police officer when he was still working before he retired. Him and all his buddies couldn't figure it out. Thank God for his buddies. They covered up for me a lot. That was nice because I used to cop in the neighborhood that he, on his beat. And for any of you non-gambleaholics, his beat was Northwest District, which is where Pimlico is. If you know Preakness, if you do the horse thing, that's where he worked. That was my playground, so to speak. My one of the old places they told me to avoid. Just like where I live now, they was like, "Oh, that's an old place. You can't go back to Ocean City. You can't go back to the beach. That's an old place." Man, when you drink like I drink, everywhere is an old place. Everything is a trigger. I need Coke on the back of a toilet. What am I never gonna pee again? Look, I'm just not in the avoid the triggers and that I'm just not in that category because I was graced with a reprieve. And people in here, like you, showed me how to prepare myself to receive that grace. You know? God doesn't pick and choose who gets it. You know, I'm not chosen. God uses who he can, when he can, where he can. He's got a lot to do. There's a lot of people on this planet that need help. You know? I feel real fortunate that I get to be one of the ones that uses. I'd like to know more often when that's happening. Not that it would matter. I'd probably mess it up if I knew, you know. And I'm sure the only reason, you know, underneath of all of the fluffy reasons that I could give about wanting to know, the underneath of all of them would be some selfish motive to take credit for his work, you know. Because, I mean, look, I might be far removed from drink, but I am human, and the self-centeredness runs deep with this one. It really does. Not that God has not improved me. He definitely has. And if I ran into me who I was even last year or 10 years ago or 30 years ago, like, dude, I would avoid her. I'd be crossing the street, walking on the other side, putting my blinders up, you know. The transformation that I have witnessed in myself isn't squat compared to what other people see. That's why I look at myself as one of God's masterpieces, because I hear out of their face, out of your face, the testimony of what his power looks like. Do I show it every day, all the time? There are definitely times behind closed doors you would be like, "Ooh, I can't believe I was listening to her." And I'm sure that the girls that I sponsor say that. But I try to take the 10th step with me everywhere and test my thoughts before I act these days. And it makes a world of difference in all the events that I don't have to do. It's like the best thing ever. My current sponsors, I have two, and together have less time than I do. But I knew within, I'm going to say, 2, 3 minutes of hearing each of them share that they had something that I didn't. They had a connection with some power that I clearly lacked. And if I didn't get it, like I was just going to die. Like I could see it. The clarity was like getting glasses with the right prescription, finally. You know, I was like, whoa. And one of the first things that Denise had me do was sit in quiet time. And I was like, dude, at the time I was like 20 some years sober. And I'm thinking, I've been reading this book for 20 some years. You know, I'm sponsoring half of the women in my area. Like, you can't tell me that you're going to give me something new and something different. And plus, you're doing it out of order and you can't do that. What you're telling me to do is 11, and we got 10 more before that. And I told her, I'm now straight, you know? I was straight with her. I knew my leg was on the line. And when we're talking about that, I'm putting it on the table, man. I'm putting it on the table. I'm a survivor. And she told me flat out, if you don't get connected to a God, quit. You're going to die. And we don't have time to waste on those 10 other steps that you have to do first. You know, we got 12 of them. So why would I limit myself? Like, that's just kind of, I've heard some of the old timers in my area talk like that. Oh, I'm just going to stay in 10, 11, and 12. Yeah, good for you. I'm glad you can do that. Maybe they're not alcoholic like I am. I mean, like, I need all the help I can get. Why would I shoot myself in the foot? I mean, I did that enough when I was drinking. I don't need to do it now. Now I'm like, you know, property of God. I'm not gonna mess that up. I was just trying to not say something that shouldn't come out of my mouth. In situations like this where it's small and intimate, I feel like I'm having a one-on-one with each and every one of you in this room right now, you know? And that's like when I can be real. That's when I can unzip my earth suit and you can experience the affection and the joy that emotes from within my heart for you. You know? When I'm in a big group of people, I'm wearing the mask, I'm saying what they want to hear. You know, and I'm putting on the show because believe you me, my parents taught me how to do that. Of all the things that I have learned, like that's one of the things that I can do, you know, not just hammered, but you know, half asleep, eyes closed, not even paying attention. Completely asleep with the connection to God. But when it's situations like this that are smaller and more intimate and more interactive, like it's just me, you know? I'm just one face of what God's love might look like for you. The person next to you on your left and the person next to you on your right are also what God's love looks like. Like, each and every one of you are my brothers and sisters, as far as I'm concerned. You know, like, I witnessed certain groups where this one won't talk to that one, and this one won't talk to this one, and these people only talk to each other. And I was never able to fit. Like, if I can't fit in my own fellowship, we got a problem. When my focus is on what did God put me here for today, none of that is even an issue. Like, it never comes up even. It's almost like I know that they say the big book protects newcomers from old timers. I know that they say the traditions protect the fellowship from us. You know, they got all these little kitschy phrases for stuff. I almost feel like it's doing a disservice when I look at it as though it's that simple. Because my actions day in, day out, everywhere doing anything, affect how each of you experience whatever your concept of a higher power. I know that because my book talks about our understanding, not my understanding. I don't get to pick. I hear a lot of the girls that I get to sponsor tell me that I don't know what I should pick for a higher power. Dude, conception, not concept. Two completely different things, right? Not that there's anything wrong with thinking that, you know, the doorknob is where it's at, but like, is that sustainable for the long term? I don't know about you. I'm not going to turn my will and my life over to a draper rod. Okay. Like, it's just not going to happen. Am I more than willing to turn my will and my life over to the guy on the corner I just gave a 50 spot to? You bet. That's what I got to remember. Because, see, I've got this alcoholism thing. So I don't get to choose when I drink. I get to choose when I don't drink. I know there's a lot of people that are giving testimony about they woke up this morning and chose not to drink. Well, I'm glad you can do that. I don't get the luxury of that choice. I done lost that choice. I'm in the category of unable to recover without spiritual. That's the category I fall in. And I have to know that. Do I have to tolerate people that are not in that 10 cap? Yeah. I roll for those that didn't see that. I lost the power of choice. That's just all there is to it. I lost the power of choice. One of the guys in my group introduces himself. He doesn't say that he's an alcoholic or that he is alcoholic. He says that he's powerless over alcohol. Not that it matters how we, introduce ourselves, but it gives me a different perspective as to what am I really doing here. Like, a lot of the girls that I get to work with, especially the younger ones, are like, oh, I can't wait to do this with my life, and I can't wait to do that with my life. My life is not mine. If I learn anything from my third step, my life does not belong to me. God spared my life. It's His. Simple. Real simple. I don't get, all I'm going to say about that is the way that some people misinterpret the spiritual actions that I have to take on a daily basis to stay connected to this power. Some of them don't have to, and that's why they can do the things that they do with the people they do it with. You know what I mean? I have to know that I'm not in that category. Because then I start looking at what they got and what they're driving and where they live, and I'm thinking, man, what am I doing wrong? I must be doing something wrong. Wrong. It goes beyond the I'm comparing their outside to my inside. It goes down to the motivation behind my purpose. And that's the one I gotta learn. That's the one I gotta know. Is it me or is it other than me? Because as long as my motive is coming from self, dude, you better stay out of my wake. Because you will drown. I will take you down with me even if I love you. Because that's what kind of alcoholic I am. I'll probably blame you for it after I do it. I won't even remember half of the things that I do to harm you or even know to have the ability to forget. I hear some people talk about this built-in forgetter. Look, I can assure you there are plenty more things that I'm not even conscious of the harm that I do others besides the things that I forget that I do. I can't tell you how many nine-step experiences I had where the kind of harm that I thought that I did wasn't squat compared to the harm that I actually did. And when they told me about it, I was so ashamed. And this is where that magic happened in step nine for me. Like, not only did I feel bad, I was compelled to do whatever they said would set it right with them. How arrogant of me to think I know how to set it right with you. A lot of the girls that I sponsor ask me that question. This is what I think I should do for nine step with this stuff. Dude, why are you asking me? Ask God, I don't know. Heaven forbid. I mean, I can tell you right now, my sponsor, she made me go to every single one of the girls that I was sponsoring and tell them to not listen to a word that I told them about what they should do for their next step. You talk about humbling. I was eating some pie that day, believe me. And some of those girls, man, they haven't talked to me to this day. Like they don't want what I have. And that's fine. They could go on with their, happy lives and their degrees and their kids and whatever else they got going on, asleep to this purpose that God has given me to do. They don't have to. And that's how I understand it now. I used to get kind of mad about it. Why do I have to do this? Look at them. Look at what they're doing and what they're getting. They're getting good stuff from doing garbage. How is that right? What, is God working with on some formula? Like, oh, if you do this the right way, then this is good. You're going to get everything you want? No, it's not how God works. God doesn't work on a spreadsheet. I thought he did. I thought that's how this whole program, spirituality, AA thing went. If you do the right thing, you'll get what you want. There's a lot of people that encourage that kind of thinking. They say stuff like, oh, dude, that one doesn't want it bad enough. Are you kidding me? I can't tell you how many times I wanted it. I drank years past the point that I needed to stop. Years. Wanted to stop at certain points. I was just unable to do it. It was impossible. They used to tell me things like, you remember your first drink? If you don't remember your last drink, you haven't had it yet. Well, I don't know the first, I don't remember my first drink. I remember the first one I took on my own. That was at my parents' wedding. And I crawled right down the center of the banquet table and polished off everybody's drinks. The whole room stopped. Cameras flash, remember flash cubes on the old schematics? They're blinking, like everybody's smiling and laughing, and all their attention was on me. And I ate it right up, man. I ate it right up. My mom had just changed my diaper. I remember this day like it was yesterday. I covered myself with powder, possibly, imitating some other scene that I saw somewhere else where I shouldn't have been. And I couldn't get enough of it from that point on. I know that some of you had periods where you drank with impunity. That was never the case for me. I went from 0 to 100 in a very short time. Before I was walking, I was still crawling then. Wasn't even walking yet. And it did get worse from there. It got real bad real fast. And alcohol became not enough quickly. Which let me seek out other avenues, which I guess you could say brought me, to my knees quicker. I guess you could say. I didn't know what the bottom was. I had a really hard time identifying when I first came in. Y'all were talking about all the DUIs and all the OUIs that you had, and all the cars you lost, and the spouses that you lost, and the kids that won't talk to you. Dude, I didn't have none of that stuff. All the boats you put up your nose. I didn't have none of that. I just didn't. I never did any stints. You should have heard those guys in that couple of those groups I was in, like, oh, I was in for 5 years for this, and I was in for 10 years for that. Dude, the worst stint I ever did was getting grounded and sent to my room, My mom made me wear Jenny's hand-me-down uniforms instead of buying me new, freshly starched pleated skirts. And Jenny was fat, so all her pleats, and her mother never starched her pleats, so they were always, lumpy. And I had to put a safety pin in them. Because that's where I learned and continued to carry those ideas of I deserve less clear into my adulthood. Not true. Not true at all, but I believed it for many years, you know. I've done a lot of work in other areas in my sobriety, and therapy has been a big help. My therapy does not fix my alcoholism, but it helps me be more effective when I'm practicing the spiritual principles that I have to live by. It makes me more whole. It makes me a clean canvas for God's work, you know, for his masterpieces. And mean, would it be really easy to just sit back and feel sorry for myself and live in this world of pity and all this? I bet. And then the family I was raised in, literally, I'm still the only sober person in my whole family. I have one cousin who was on one of the Suboxone type, methadone type medications for like 5 years, and he got his kids back. Literally, that's as close as I've ever come to being not the only sober person in my family. My Uncle Frankie was an AA. And he was in my pop-up's generation. So because he was my pop-up's brother. And Uncle Frankie, like as far as the family was concerned, he was nuts. And where they put him is where he belonged. He was in one of the, you know, state care, like retirement homes, if you will. And while Uncle Frankie was alive, I used to correspond. You know, I'd send him Christmas cards and little letters and tell him about, you know, the groups that I was down to. And he had long since been removed from meetings because he couldn't get out. And the guys in his area didn't care enough about making sure that A was still here. To go take him a meeting at the facility where he was, you know. I look at it like it is my responsibility to ensure that not only is this fellowship still here when the next generation comes up, but that it's intact and that the message is clear. I don't have to drink anymore. There was a day where I had to drink. Was a lot of days where I had to drink. And the most inopportune times, and the work, you know, give me the exact time I'm not supposed to be whacked out of my mind, and dude, I'll show up and I'll be late and whacked. And not even intend to like destroy the event. It's just my natural course, you know? I'll just mess it up. I don't even try. The grace that I get to not be stuck in that same story over and over and over every day for the rest of my days is a miracle. Being somewhere that has an extra stock of not just toilet paper rolls, but really soft, puffy toilet paper rolls. I mean, that's so wonderful. Was in detox for almost 2 weeks. I was in detox for 13 days, which is a long detox. Even back then, it was a long detox. They had to pump me full of all kinds of Valium and whatnot, benzos to make sure, because I was seasoned. Like literally, the clothes that I was wearing when my mom dropped me off at that, and you know, incidentally, that day, I was living in the top floor of an abandoned building. I said living, I wasn't really living there, but that's where I was sleeping and where I left all the stuff I had left, which believe I could carry it with 2 hands. My mom picked me up and she was like, "You want to get a breakfast?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I was hungry. I was hungry. I hadn't had real food for like months." right? Hadn't bathed for that long. I mean, it was gross. And the clothes that I was wearing came off of somebody's clothesline. Don't know whose clothes, one of the neighbors, I don't know who it was. It was getting cold. It was towards the end of October. I tell you, I told you that my date of sobriety was 10/30 of 1989. I don't know the exact date. We have deduced that it was before Halloween and in October. So I've celebrated the 30th for, as long as I've been around, so to speak. But I don't know what day it was. I don't remember my last drink. I was a blackout drinker. How am I going to remember my last drink? Again, I try to not encourage the shooting in the foot. I try to not encourage the misinterpretation of the practice of our principles. A lot of the new girls that I get to work with want homework. You kidding me? This is life. Go live. See those doors? Walk through them. Now you can do it. I've heard of some sponsors that, they give them assignments and give them this and all. Dude, I got enough problem managing my own life, let alone yours. I mean, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. One of the exercises Denise had me do, now this is cool. One of the exercises that Denise had me do was take the third step prayer, and she had broken it down into phrases, right? And we turn the phrases into questions. God, I offer myself. What am I offering? Right? And I answered each of these questions that we devised from the prayer. Because see, I didn't pray like that. These and nows and nines. Like, I don't talk like that. I don't pray like that. When I'm reading the prayer in the book, it doesn't feel sincere to me. I mean, not that God hasn't heard me. When God can hear the sincerity behind whatever rote action or prayer I'm doing or taking or saying, right? At the time, I didn't have that understanding or concept or conception. And so we took the answers to those questions and formulated a third step prayer in my own words. Because she told me flat out, and the book backs her up, that the words are not as important as what's behind it, right? And then I did start to feel like it was something different. Initially, it kind of felt like invalid because it wasn't the one in the book. But then I realized it was because, I was raised Catholic. I was born with a mass book in my hand. I mean, like, just because it wasn't in the official catechism didn't invalidate it. AA didn't have one of those official. This is how you do it. Although there's a lot of people that want you to believe there is. There's definite ways that you don't do it. But as far as the wording in that prayer, it was not near as important as the sincerity behind it. And God heard it. I mean, God knew the sincerity behind the actions that I took when I was using a Dr. Pepper can as my higher power. The very first spiritual experience I ever had was sober, was at the halfway house that I was at, and they had the quiet time built in to the day, the planned actions of the day, because every minute of my day was, accounted for in that, place. And so I'm listening to Black Sabbath, and Ozzy's telling me that I'm killing myself to live. I was like, oh my God, he gets it. Why am I not getting this? How did I miss this all this time? Right? God understood the sincerity behind me talking to the Dr. Pepper can. And that is where my relationship with God started. Even though I had a belief in that God, long before then, you know. When I get girls that don't have belief or don't have any experience with God like I did, sometimes it's easier working with them because they're like a clean slate, man. I get to show them an untouched, unadulterated, unbastardized version of what real power looks like. They can get the message of depth and weight without making half the mistakes that I've made. And getting to see that is beautiful. Oh man, is it beautiful. The very first inventory that I did with Chris is the other girl that. All right, so neither of them call themselves my sponsor. I use that term from the podium just because everybody knows what it's supposed to be. But neither of them make regular practice of using that term. And look, we both know what we're doing. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have to label it. There's a lot of people that have to put these labels. I mean, I was like that. I had to put the labels and I identify it and understand it. But I'm the kind of alcoholic that cannot recover on a psychological experience. I have to have a spiritual experience to recover, right? That's where when I began to see that the labels were limiting, is when I began to understand that. See, the illness that I have, I can learn everything there is to know about alcoholism and still die from it and still drink, right? So, the very first inventory that I did with Chris, it was pretty big, like as far as what God was looking like. I know that you guys don't live by the coast, but I know you were watching the news when they were talking about Hurricane Sandy coming up the coast, right? Since then, they've renamed it as the Superstorm, whatever. It was a big hurricane. And it was late summer of, here it was. I don't know, might have been 10, 15 years ago. I don't know what year it was. And it pretty much trashed like the whole area where Denise and Chris live. They're up on Long Island. Like Denise's boyfriend's house washed in the ocean, never came back. There was no power at all where Chris was. All the cell towers were down. There was no gas on the island, right? No fuel. They couldn't get in and out. All the roads were blocked. I had a phone that was like a flip phone, you know? I didn't have GPS in my car. I didn't have GPS on my phone. I had a printed paper Google map that I, you know, used the paper at work to print out. Yes, I put it in the petty cash box because, you know, using the work equipment and facilities and the stuff that I had access to without being responsible, that's theft. Y'all taught me that. Not giving my supervisor an honest day's work for what he was paying me to do. A stealing, man. It's dishonest. And I'm the kind of alcoholic, like, I have to be honest. So anyway, I had this printed out Google map. And half the roads that I was supposed to take to get up there were like, you know, non-existent, like washed out, flooded. We're texting, you know, ABCD, ABCD, kind of texting the whole way, you know, up 95. And we had figured out I was supposed to get to our home group like right as it was ending. And then the whole group went, because they got diners everywhere up there, just kind of like bars where I live. They go to the diner afterwards and, you know, share a meal, you know, break bread together and pull off the highway because I hit a massive, massive pothole. I was hoping it got to crack an axle. Or, you know, I was hoping it was just a flat tire. That would be no big deal. You know, I knew how to get another tire. Even if, you know, everywhere was closed, I could get a tire and get it on there. So, pulled off the main highway, double checked it, and I see this. I'm in an empty parking lot, and it's pitch black, right? Because there's no electricity. And I'm like, this does not, I mean, you can tell when you're somewhere you're not supposed to be. It looked like somewhere that, you know, was not inhabitable, if you know what I'm saying. And I'm looking over, and it's a church parking lot, and there's a set of double doors just like these, and there's a dude in the door with a flashlight like this. And I'm like, can I see the wheel out of my side mirrors? And I'm jiggering the things, trying to move them up and down so I don't have to get out of the car, right? Because I can sense clearly I'm in a place where I probably shouldn't be. But I just want to make sure that everything's cool in the car. So, as it turns out, the guy with the flashlight is the guy who connected me and Chris and Denise. I sent my phone number and name to them through their group's contact us button, right? And it was Phil. And they were waiting for me. I had arrived at the meeting 2 hours before I was supposed to get there. How does that happen? She's tracking me the whole way. I'm telling her where I am. I'm at this sign, I'm at this intersection. You know, she knew when I was getting there. My car was in that meeting's parking lot. I didn't even know I was at her meeting. I didn't even know I was on Long Island at that point. It was pitch black. I didn't know where I was. I didn't know what I was doing. Just like every other AA thing I do, I don't know where I'm going or what I'm going to do when I get there. But I know that God's sending me on this mission, right? While we're doing my inventory, her boyfriend, now husband, was in line to get gas. He waited 4 hours for a half a tank of gas for her Honda Civic. The day that I left, the following day, I had 2 5-gallon jugs in my trunk. She was like, "Why didn't you tell me you had gas? They would have stole your car for this gas." I didn't know. I didn't know. Thank God. I had backed in the parking spot so the trunk was facing the wall, you know? Seconds and inches, man. Somehow my needs get met. God pulls that off. I get to witness it. I get to tell you it happened. I'm like, other than that, I got to give all the credit to God. I just want to thank y'all for having me up here today. And I'm looking forward to hearing our other couple of speakers, my friend David and my friend Teresa, who have traveled further than me, just to share the day with you. And thank you for sharing your day with me. And thank you for my life. Thank you.